Then headed to Texas on her national book tour. That does it for our show. A very happy birthday to Erin Dooley. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdul-Qudus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terasena, Tammy Warren, Evcharina Nadura, Sam Malkoff, Tamari Astu, Gia Rabi, Karen, Hani Massoud. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Latino New Yorkers were 8 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis than white New Yorkers over the past 30 years. Black New Yorkers, 15 times more likely. White, black, or brown, data shows we all use cannabis at the same rate. Now New York has changed course and legalized cannabis for adults 21 and over. We are building an equitable industry that invests in communities. Learn more and visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting on FM frequencies 90.1 and 107.3, as well as over the internet at the website WUSB.FM. It's 6 o'clock. It's Tuesday. It's time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Kyle.
Yes, occasionally. On occasion.
Yes, on occasion. And I have something. I just indulge me for a moment. I want to get this off my chest. Okay, so we have this event, right, last weekend that we all heard about. This massive storm, not just a storm, a solar storm. The sun is attacking the Earth, basically, sending out these massive flares. And we're going to see all kinds of effects. We're going to see the power grid get destroyed, and satellites will stop working, and telecommunications and devices, and oh my God, what could be the end of humanity? And then absolutely nothing happens. Nothing. I mean, you know, I'm looking for something, anything, and not even a flicker. I mean, boy, you know, I thought the Earthbound weathermen were bad, but this, who are the, these are these NOAA? Is that what they are? NOAA? What does that stand for, Kyle?
Well, they're part of the National Weather Service.
But are they?
Yeah, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association.
This is them, right? They did this.
I don't think so. Maybe also like some space forecasters come from NASA.
Yeah, you know.
The space organization.
All right, you space guys, I have some words for you, okay? First of all, don't get my hopes up, okay? Yeah, biggest storm in 20 years. You know, that woke me up. I was really looking forward to something, and it's over now? I didn't see a damn thing. And then, okay, Northern Lights. Everyone's going to see the Northern Lights. Well, we're not going to see the Northern Lights in the Northeast because it was cloudy all damn weekend, all right? And don't try and make me feel better by telling me to hold my phone up to the sky, take a picture, and your phone can see things that your eyes can't. If you look at your phone, you'll see some colors, and that's the Northern Lights. I am not seeing the Northern Lights if I do that. My phone is seeing it. I want to see the Northern Lights. I've been trying all my life to see those damn things, and I can't do it. I've been to Tromso in Norway. I've been to Fairbanks in Alaska. I've been to the Yukon. I've been all over this damn planet at night doing everything I'm supposed to do to see them, and they don't exist. They don't exist. Don't get my hopes up. That's all I ask. You know, I can survive with, you know, a fairly negative view of the world and of life and, you know, the mundane. Don't tell me I'm going to see something amazing when we're socked in with rain for the entire weekend, and even if we weren't, I'm sure something would happen to prevent us from seeing them. Yeah. All right, and I got that off my chest. I feel better. You didn't see the Northern Lights, did you, Kyle?
I don't think so.
No. I mean, I did take a picture with my phone, and it looked like, oh, yeah, maybe there's some color there, but that's not thrilling. You know, I could take a picture of a rainbow, and it's more thrilling.
I'm accepting of what weather I can get.
Yeah, I would appreciate some weather. Some nice, you know, stormy weather, real stormy weather. But you know what? Next time, space people, next time a solar storm is coming our way, keep your mouth shut. Let it surprise us, all right? That's more of a thrill. See, my hopes wouldn't have been dashed if they weren't uplifted in the first place.
Well, that doesn't make sense because a lot of the reason nothing, like, cataclysmic occurred is that people were taking precautions, allegedly.
I hate precautions.
But they can't notify people. I mean, they can't notify those people to do a good job of handling it such that we don't notice unless they tell people. So it's like any forecasts, you know, the kinds of staging, if power outages are imminent, all that management, like, that's important.
Do you remember,
to get the communications out? That's why we have a community radio like WUSB.
Not a month ago, we were hightailing it through Dallas and Shreveport, New Orleans, different kinds of weather threats in all of those cities. And we were hearing the EAS system going off, and everybody is on top of things and alerting people and warning people and chastising people for going out in the storms. That's what it's all about. That's excitement. That's weather. All right. They know how to do it out there. They do. We just have to get a little better at it here. You know, I'm sure there's other galactic phenomena that we can be scared by.
Until next time.
Yeah. When's that going to be? You know? All right. Good news. Our friend in super quotes and italics and whatever else you want to make it sound ironic. Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman. He had a big defeat in the last week. A state Supreme Court justice it's one justice? Okay. I guess it's not the whole state Supreme Court. I don't know how it works. I guess one justice can just do this. whatever. They struck down Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman's executive order barring transgender females from participating in girls and women's sports played at county parks and facilities. Now, Blakeman had signed an executive order back in February banning transgender girls from participating in female sports played on county properties. The New York Civil Liberties Union, the Long Island Roller Rebels, you know who they are? They're an all-female flat track roller derby team. Yeah, they filed a lawsuit in March saying Blakeman's order violated the state's human rights law and civil rights law, as well as guidance from the state education department. Now, this is an all-female roller derby team. I think they have more insight and should be listened to more than some elderly white guy that doesn't understand what transgender girls are and sees threats around every damn corner and is just filled with ignorance and hate. I'd rather listen to them. Unfortunately, so does the state Supreme Court. Now, Blakeman's order, which he said was meant to protect female athletes from being bullied or hurt by biological males, applied to more than 100 sites, including ball fields, basketball courts, swimming pools. And this is the really sick part. Organizations seeking county permits must expressly designate whether their players are male, female, or co-ed based on their members' biological sex at birth, according to the executive order. In a 13-page decision, the justice wrote that Blakeman did not have the authority to issue the executive order. As such, it cannot be enforced. Doesn't even know the law. Doesn't know how it works. And we're supposed to listen to this guy about something that he really doesn't know how it works. In reaction to the ruling on Saturday, Blakeman blamed a lack of courage from a judge who didn't want to decide the case on its merits. Unfortunately, girls and women are hurt by the court. Nassau County will appeal without much faith in the appellate division applying the law without far-left doctrine being used to undermine women's sports. Yeah, because that's what the far left is all about. Let's undermine women's sports. That's something that has been in the crosshairs for a while. My God. These people, they sit around coming up with ways to just act stupid. You know? Blakeman was widely rebuked for discriminating against transgender athletes, with advocates for civil rights and the LGBTQ community, along with Democratic elected officials, strongly condemning the first-term county executive. Is it only the first term? Feels like forever. Oh, maybe they'll get rid of him. I sure hope so. Boy, he's awful. He's terrible. Racist and sexist and ignorant. And Nassau, you voted for him. Why?
You can tell the intentions based on how they use what stories are that are being that it's their surface and that they are putting out there. Mm-hmm. In other words, the sort of using it as a wedge for a larger condemnation instead of breaking down and trying to work through what kinds of guidelines and policies are actually applicable and right. needed or not needed, and working with the community and doing the sort of organizing that is necessary to get it right. If it's a wedge and they're trying to amplify it as something contentious and a derisive, you know, something that is divisive and caustic, that's a real negative red flag to guide you in understanding their intentions.
Absolutely.
And what's in their hearts.
You know, this again, it's an elderly white guy, like, you know, imposing his will on female athletes. How about you talk to the female athletes? You have at least one group here that is dead set against what you are proposing. And I think they just have a lot more credence than anything you have to say. If there is a problem, and I say if there is a problem, it needs to be addressed and solved by women athletes, nobody else. And that's, you know, that's really open to speculation if it's even an issue. But I'm not going to stand here and tell you what is and is not an issue. And you certainly shouldn't. It's just... it's ridiculous. And here's the kicker here. He has yet to cite a single example of local transgender female athletes seeking to play on women's sports teams. Now, I just want to emphasize that. There is not a single example that he has cited of local transgender female athletes seeking to play on women's sports teams. Not seeking to bully, not seeking to win the Olympics, not seeking to dominate in all ways. No, it's just seeking to play. Not a single case has been documented, and yet you have demonized the transgender community and saying that they're a threat to a group that you are so far away from that it's almost comical to hear you try and decide what is best for them. Curly Fry is president of the Long Island Roller Rebels. I don't think I had to tell you that. Said in a statement, this decision is a victory for those who believe that transgender people have the right to participate in sports just like everyone else. As a league welcoming trans women and committed to providing a safe space for everyone to be their full selves, County Executive Blakeman's order tried to punish us just because we believe in inclusion and stand against transphobia. And I think that says it right there. It's no coincidence that this kind of thing is happening in the right wing all throughout the country. It's really a shame to see it happening right here on Long Island, but can't say I'm surprised. All right.
There's a lot to it, and it's something, you know, that if you want to get into, it's worth working on, but to be used in this way as something they want to be kind of mysterious and something that people don't look into and don't want to actually hash through what is needed, mm-hmm. instead of just doing these sort of blanket policies that don't even give an opportunity to hear what the community is actually asking for, it's pretty cruel to just be using it during the sort of election season.
And it has an effect on the populace. People walk around thinking that it's just like immigration. It's just like migrants and refugees. You somehow think of them as the threat because they're demonized by ignorant people who don't know any better. And you look at the actual evidence, you look at statistics, and you see that what they say simply is not true. I mean, I hate to tell people to listen to a Trump rally, but listen to some of the things he's saying about, what's the latest, Hannibal Lecter? They're all...
I had a theory about
Silence
that, yeah.
of the Lambs? What's going on with that?
Well, I think it's a weird sort of language thing
he
with...
He can't even get the title of the film right. He keeps saying Silence of the Lamb.
Oh, yeah. It's totally, like, off base in all the referencing.
More
but,
than one lamb.
But I think he's trying to, like, associate fresh out of the asylum and asylum seekers to try to make this...
Oh, my God,
this,
you're right.
Like, it's the stupidest correlation, but in a very simplistic way... He can associate that when people talk about the word, like the phrase asylum seekers.
That's what he's doing.
Totally. And it's so that the stupid electorate can conflate that accidentally
well,
or not.
Let's not judge the electorate before we judge him, because I think he's not thinking that through, saying I'm going to trick them. I think he might really believe that. I think he might really think that an asylum seeker somehow is related to a mental asylum. I mean, he doesn't think that far ahead. So, but I never considered that. But, you know, he is, when you look at him talking,
it's just a theory.
It gets so confusing so quickly, and those words get thrown around.
It's just dumb enough to be so contrived.
But then you wind up thinking of these people as somehow the threat. And if you ever get to know, and God, I really encourage people, get to know those people who you think you're afraid of. You know, hang out with them and listen to them. Learn about them, and you will be surprised. And, you know, Kyle and I do this when we go into the deep South, we see the people that we judge, you know, and we talk to them sometimes, and we never have issues. And it's, you know, there is so much common ground to be shared in any group of people. And once you do that, the other challenges become a lot more manageable.
Yeah. And I mean, a very small portion of people that actually take politics seriously that are buying that, because I think most people that are voting see right through that and just how bonkers it is right now. Oh. At a time when we absolutely have so many more important things that to be potentially fearful of, not even this afraid of something so comedically, like, I don't even know what theatrical. Mm-hmm. It's literally referencing theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
Political theater, right?
And
amazing.
And they would be afraid of theater too, because they don't understand that community either. We'll get to that. Yeah, Eurovision was this weekend. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. That was a lot of fun. Here's some news that just came out as well concerning cannabis in New York State. Yeah, you know, we've been critics of the way it's been rolled out. Apparently, we were right about this. It's now been referred to as a botched cannabis industry rollout in New York. The legal cannabis marketplace has floundered over the past 2 years. Well, now Kathy Hochul's administration has announced new measures aimed at greenlighting more marijuana businesses and shuttering illicit weed stores, including a new enforcement task force headed by state police. The problem is the illicit businesses that pop up, they pop up because there aren't any legal ones around. And it's legal. Marijuana is legal now in the state. So what do you expect is going to happen when, you sit on your hands and don't make any movement forward? I mean, it was what, 2 years ago that we went to the first dispensary in New York City? Almost 2 years ago. And I figured on Long Island, we'd see a lot of dispensaries opening up. Apart from reservations, Shinnecock, Mastic, there's nothing in Brookhaven. Nothing. What do you have there, Kyle? You have bags and bags.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of packaging.
Wow. Wait. My goodness.
I've been helping with this. And a lot of bags.
Wow, you've been doing some shopping.
Yeah, I was researching.
That's a lot of jars
for the show.
Those are cool jars. If you're not into the cannabis, you could be into the jars.
It's itself an art form.
Uh huh. So you found some outlets, but they're not around here. They're not around Stony Brook. They're not around Port Jefferson.
No, Long Island, I think, still only has 3 officially, but that's not entirely the case.
For some reason, they keep opening up in Farmingdale. I don't know why that is, or East Farmingdale. But there's nothing in Brookhaven apart from a bunch in the reservation, and of course in Southampton as well. But as far as state-sanctioned dispensaries, It's really, really sparse, in fact, non-existent in this part of the island. And that's because of incompetence on the state level.
I think this has been mentioned, but the state should come through with like a mail order scheme that's really well done and incorporates some of the existing oversupply and other situations to maybe jumpstart a new chapter for the state agency, as well as approving a bunch of retail spots.
Mail order.
Yeah. I mean, I saw it work pretty well in Canada. I don't know if it could work in a state like New York scale up.
It's legal throughout the entire country in Canada. You can get on an airplane with marijuana and fly if you're flying somewhere else in Canada. And that's a level that we have not even flirted with yet.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of delivery. I know there's a lot of those places that were sort of on the gray area or selling fake, like the sort of derivative forms of THC, right, which is a whole other issue. They're like technically legal, but it's not the same psychoactive substance
that
as
fooled
THC.
A lot of people.
Absolutely, some of those places are stocking actual recreational cannabis now. On our trip in the Bible Belt, I was seeing some indication of like medicinal places and in other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. But out here, I think there's still a lot of businesses that have dual purposes, like for prescribing homeopathic remedies and stuff. Those kind of places already have a concern and care and a customer base that is open to healthful products like that. But I think they're not a priority. They haven't been a priority in the same way as some of the social injustice and other initiatives for formerly incarcerated people. But getting the balance right, I think, has been tough because I think that they wanted to support and bolster those entrants into the retail market, but were I think, singularly focused on that, whereas they could have done other types of rollouts in parallel, which they may start doing, but mm-hmm. it's a really complicated landscape right now, and I've seen a lot of different of the implementations out here, and overall, I think that it's good. Like, the when you go in, the places are well-run, and it's casual. And
yeah, they're great when you go into them.
And I don't know that we're, like, oversaturated in any way, but
there isn't a single one. We can't be oversaturated.
Exactly. And I think, like you said, it's filling in gaps, and the quality, both in the recreational market, but because I think there's still some faltering and some missteps with how some of that's processed, the size of colas, the stickiness, all the details that people mm-hmm. would be concerned about, there's variation in all of that yet. But I think some of it's stabilized. It's gotten better, and the quantities and packaging. Because, like I just pointed out, there's a lot of waste in just the packaging, and that's a huge expense for people that are starting these kinds of businesses. So hopefully, a lot of that.
All those jars, that's got to cost a fortune.
Yeah,
you have like 50 jars on the floor here.
Can you imagine like buying a whole bunch of that for your business, and you're just trying to sell flour?
Okay, so these are the assessments that the state findings of the state cannabis program: a failure to centralize licensing operations that created complex and obscure requirements, which contributed to creating a bottleneck of marijuana business applicants. The cannabis agency provided sparse customer service while lacking transparency about its licensing process, both of which left many businesses frustrated and distrustful of the state agency. A lack of data and key performance indicators within the cannabis agency structure, which also pursued a misguided attempt to create new information technology systems rather than leveraging existing IT resources within other state agencies. So most concerning, according to the investigators, the cannabis agency did not intend on reviewing all retail license applications it received. Let me repeat that. They didn't intend on even reviewing the retail license applications they received while accepting non-refundable application fees and requiring many applicants to execute leases or purchase property. That's criminal. I mean, how could you do that to people?
It's super inconsiderate. And I mean, to just, cash all that and then not realize that people are treading water with a business that actually cannot generate income and revenue, like, you're really doing a disservice to people that would be, once up and running, probably standing a great chance of surviving in a longer haul once they can stabilize an actual business plan.
So Kathy Hochul's plan now for overhauling this is committing to putting in place a service level agreement to allow for completion of cannabis retail license applications within 90 days for future application windows, creating new communications tools, including regulatory bulletins and public dashboards to improve customer service, launching a state-run cannabis map tool online to improve the transparency surrounding licensed retail locations. That's supposed to happen this summer. Adding staff to cannabis business licensing, compliance, and enforcement teams. You know, we just want to see the dispensaries open already. This was legalized ages ago. It should have been in place years ago. It's really embarrassing.
Yeah. And that the retail is really, really a great way people in the community can be a lot less stressed out about acquiring high quality cannabis instead of dealing with places that might be fly by night or kind of not consistent and lacking another in uncertain terms.
So dealing with this, you need marijuana to just deal with the marijuana application process. I just hope these people are taken care of because, the money lost, the time lost, it's insane. And these are reputable businesses. These are it's good for the population.
They got to get the retail right. It's out in the community. It takes so many different things to construct and do properly. And there's other innovations, like I mentioned, that could be implemented as well. This mm-hmm. is the broader goal of this state organization. So hopefully there's new, more, and better developments.
Other states have done it pretty well. I think Massachusetts, has done a pretty good job. And of course, Canada is next door. So let's look at them, maybe take some notes.
Well, the need for caution is important, but it also has a downside if they're overly cautious and not implementing it to meet the market.
Something else that relieves stress and is good for you is exercise. And you had an adventure today. You're riding your bike around.
Oh yeah.
And you almost ran into somebody.
Well, I was doing my routine, and I think the lesson here, wherever anybody is, it's getting warmer. If you're out on the roads, maybe going to the beach, everywhere you are, there are other creatures, and I welcome interactions with wildlife, mm-hmm. and it's the best part of being in the great outdoors, seeing what the insects and the birds and animals and creatures everywhere have to say to you, and you can see where they're at. And in any event, I was doing riding on an area that I enjoy that has some steep declines.
Uh-huh.
It's great. It's really fast, and there's a lot of tree cover. So
you like hills. You like going up hills and down hills.
Yeah, and you can do both in the route that I chose. And it's covered, so when it's really hot, it's not too much direct exposure. And so I do this as much as I can when it's starting to be bicycling season, which mm-hmm. we're approaching. And I was not as cautious when I was approaching this decline that I mentioned. And I was going pretty quickly, and in the middle of the road was a young buck with maybe like partially grown antlers with the fuzz.
Uh-huh,
that's all I saw, is these like small fuzzy antlers coming up. And
it's like a junior high.
Something like that. Deer, yeah. It was definitely just, it was striking because that's all I really glanced at to make me realize it wasn't an actual human being mm-hmm. that I expect to encounter in certain parts of the island here. So, but deer are everywhere. They're ubiquitous. So this was the last thing I saw before I slammed on the brakes, only to let go of them because I realized I was skidding into a tree.
That's not good.
Yeah, that was when it got really scary. But I recovered from the skid and rolled away from that. And the deer had been alarmed. This animal basically jumped away, like disappeared.
Want no part of this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow.
Ride cautiously.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think which was the biggest threat. Was it the skidding? Was it the tree? Was it the deer? I guess all of them could have really hurt you.
Yeah, I was not paying enough attention to how I should approach this. So I'm going to take my turns a little bit slower.
Yeah, yeah. And also, of course, if you're riding a bike out there, watch out for traffic. That's the biggest killer. And if you're driving, please, please be careful. Watch out for those bicyclists out there. Hey, we got a verbal thank you from a bicyclist today while we were driving the car.
With the window open, yeah. Yeah,
because we let her go by, at a stop sign, and she thanked us. That's really nice.
Absolutely.
I'm used to a wave. I'm not used to actual verbal thank yous.
Well, that's the thing with cycling. You're actually not enclosed in the way you are in a vehicle. And I know that sounds oversimplified, but you really must realize that you're ability to interact, to hear and see and communicate with the world is limited when you're enclosed like that. So just even a minor thing like having the window open so you can wave people ahead or listen to what they might be saying or alerting you to, those are all really important things, especially at dusk and in the mornings. If you're commuting, all of those times, just be alert because people and other creatures are out there sharing the roadways with you.
Absolutely.
And don't go too fast on turns.
Okay, moving to exciting world news. I think this is in Nassau County, the Saruhanaka High School. I never heard of it before, but it's not out here. I think it's in Nassau County. A recent lesson on the Israel-Hamas war at Saruhanaka High School spurred many parents and students to complain it was biased against Palestinians and Muslims. And that lesson is going to be scrapped now, according to the district superintendent, who acknowledged it was imbalanced. All right, it sounds like we all learned something then. More than a dozen people, some of whom identified themselves as being Muslim, criticized the lesson at a Saruhanaka school board meeting last Wednesday. They said the lesson favored the Israeli side and was offensive to Palestinians, Arabs, and Muslims. Students who heard the lesson were upset by it and worried it could lead to prejudice. Farhana Islam of New... her name is Islam. All right, so I would listen. Farhana Islam of New Hyde Park. Well, there's people whose last name is Israel, too. You know, it's kind of interesting how that works. A mother of an eighth grader in the district said at the meeting, the lesson was very disturbing. It was biased, especially against Palestinians. The damage of such teaching, she said, is immeasurable. To introduce a biased point of view to 10th graders who are so impressionable, it could lead to bullying and hostility. No, it will lead to bullying and hostility. And that's why it's so important not to pollute the minds of the impressionable with this kind of thing. Naya Imam of Mount Sinai, president of the Long Island Muslim Alliance, who saw the lesson, said, of course it is biased. The lesson is not giving the full truth. He was not at the meeting, but hopes to meet with the school principal. They need to be careful, he added. The written lesson, which was presented in a high school social studies class about a week ago, included a 3-page dialogue between an Israeli college student and a Palestinian college student, who both take passionate and opposing stands on the war. The origin of the lesson was not clear. Interim Saranhaka Superintendent Thomas Dolan said at the meeting, this was not handled well. There is an imbalance to this document. I like when people actually own up and admit that they made a mistake, you know, and we should always listen when that happens. Now, Dolan noted the teacher, whom he did not identify, had not been in the classroom since giving the lesson. She returned Thursday and will be co-teaching with another instructor for an undetermined amount of time. Maybe she's learning as well. He said the teacher meant no bias or offense and that the lesson was not part of the curriculum and not created by the teacher. And in most cases, when people make mistakes like this, they don't mean harm. They just are spouting what they have been fed themselves and they don't challenge it. You know, that's why it's so important to challenge whatever it is you're told, no matter who it's from. Dolan said was this document is one that you will not see again. Let's see if I can find some details. Okay, the language about Palestinians is very inflammatory and negative. The lesson we want to teach is peaceful coexistence, neighbor to neighbor, Jewish and Palestinian. It included inflammatory language from both of these fictional students. It's aggressive and inflammatory when what we want is real discussion, empathy, and listening. Nobody is respected in this. I could get just as many who say it puts bias the other way. In the lesson, Palestinian student says, you Israelis deserve to be pushed, and we Arabs won't stop pushing until we have pushed you into the sea. Yeah, that seems a little harsh. That seems a little biased there against the Palestinian view. The Israeli student at one point says, perhaps it is time for the Arabs to stop this foolishness. Wow, well, now that sure sounds unhinged. Yeah, I can see how this is biased. I can see how this is painting one side as being violent and another side just wants to exist. People at the meeting said the lesson's repeated use of the word Arab inflated the conflict beyond its current borders. They said the lesson made it seem like Muslims don't care about Jewish people, which they feared might sow disrespect, if not violence. And that's absolutely what it does. And that's why we have to fight back against this sort of thing wherever we see it. And you don't have to look far to see it. Let's see, quickly, because we have so much to get through. Students arrested during the police crackdown on protests at universities in New York City a couple of weeks ago were denied food and water for 16 hours. That's according to two faculty members at Columbia University's Barnard College who collected reports from students who were inside. Other students reported they were beaten by New York City Police Department officers after their arrest and taken to the hospital for injuries before being returned to central booking. Photos of the injuries were provided to TheIntercept.com. Police arrested 282 protesters at Columbia University and the City College of New York. According to the professors, they ended up at one of two jails downtown, NYPD headquarters or the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse. They said the conditions we're hearing about are inhumane. They take away the dignity of every person in there. Students arrested during the crackdown said at least two of them were put in solitary confinement for 3 hours, and others reported much longer stays. That's according to Barnard College professor Shioni Mitra, and a tenured faculty member who asked for anonymity to protect their livelihood. Yeah, that's what it's come to. The faculty members were working to support jailed students. Other students reported they were held in mouse-infested cells along with the general population of the jail. The students told the professors they weren't given food or water for 16 hours, and then at least one student was left without shoes for the same period of time. This is Vladimir Putin tactics here, what they are doing to these students, whose only crime was raising their voices and saying this is an injustice and we want justice. I'm not seeing any example in these cases of any violence on the part of the students, anti-Semitism, or any of that, the things that you're hearing about in the mainstream media. This is disgusting. This needs to be condemned, and people need to be held accountable. All right, and turning to the local scene right here at Stony Brook, as you might recall, we had our own little run-in. Stony Brook University Faculty Senate yesterday narrowly defeated a motion to censure the school's president, Maureen McGinnis, for her abysmal handling of the arrest of 29 pro-Palestinian protesters earlier this month. The Senate defeated the resolution by a 55-51 vote with three abstentions. The Senate originally was to vote on a no-confidence resolution, but switched it to a lower-level censure vote with a somewhat less critical language. McGinnis said she appreciated the backing. Don't think she understands. That's not backing. All right. If you only escape a no confidence vote by 55-51, that's not a lot of confidence. That says that half the people are not confident in you. I mean, none of it matters because it's symbolic and they have no power whatsoever to do anything. But I would definitely look at your behavior here. She said, "I'm deeply grateful for the support of the Stony Brook faculty at this challenging time for so many universities." Yeah, not really what you got there. I realize there remains passionate disagreement among members of our community on the issues we are facing, and I pledge to do whatever I can to help our campus heal and move forward. Well, how about starting by realizing that the wounds were inflicted by the university, not by the students who were there on the Stoller steps, peacefully demonstrating? You know, there's a really good piece. If you go to Newsday.com, there's a video piece. I don't think it's paywalled. You can see how it played out. You can see how the students there were, for the most part, peaceful. Yeah, there were some hotheads. There were some people who didn't want to talk to the press. There always are. That's not how you judge an entire group of people. There were dozens and dozens of people there, and they were simply there. You know, they weren't vandalizing. They were in a place where the university felt they should not be. And they wanted them to move someplace else, and the students did not want to move someplace else. That's all it was about. I guess it's kind of a microcosm of what the whole Middle East struggle is about. We don't want these people there. We want them over here. And these are people that don't want to move over there and bring out the tanks and the planes and all that. That's overreaction. Now, the vote underscored that the campus is divided right down the middle. Certainly not an endorsement of the president's handling of May 1st and 2nd incidents. McGinnis had come under fire for the arrest of the protesters and the seizing by campus police of cell phones belonging to 17 of them. That's pretty unprecedented. Two professors had their phones taken away. They were among the 29 arrested. University officials on Monday returned 16 of the phones after having them for over a week? The protesters and some legal experts said the seizure put a chilling effect on the protesters' right to free speech. Last Monday, in a heated two-hour faculty senate meeting, the organization tabled for a week a vote on the resolution expressing no confidence in President McGinnis's capacity to perform the ongoing duties of her office in a wise and humane manner. The new censure resolution stated that President McGinnis and senior administration have responded to peaceful protests on our campus with a disproportionate degree of force, failing to negotiate with students in good faith and deploying Suffolk County police and New York State troopers to arrest members of the Stony Brook community. It was the most shameful display I've witnessed in decades at Stony Brook. And for what? For what? Just to get people to move from a place where they weren't blocking anybody from going past. It was just a space. And spaces can be reallocated, yeah. We know a group had it reserved, but I'm sure they would have understood being put someplace else instead because democracy, you know, gets in the way sometimes. Stony Brook professor Josh Dubna, who was arrested, had his phone taken, said Monday police still have one student's phone. The university declined to comment on that. You know what? How do you contact a student whose phone you've taken? You call them. Except, have you figured it out yet? The problem here? Yeah. Phones should never have been taken in the first place. said Fred Klein, professor at the Hofstra University School of Law. Yeah, we're getting other universities involved now. Hofstra University School of Law, former chief of the Major Offense Bureau in the Nassau County District Attorney's Office. He believes the seizure of the phones was illegal. It seems like a pretty blatant violation of their constitutional rights. Police will generally confiscate a wallet, keys, other items while a person is being processed for an arrest, but they must return the property after the person has been released from custody. The exception is if it might serve as evidence in a criminal case, but the protesters were charged with disorderly conduct, which is a non-criminal offense. Graduation coming up this Friday. We're going to broadcast it live right here on WUSB. Tune in 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I hope to hear some noise. I hope to hear more democracy in action. And I sure hope the university does a better job handling it than they did last week. Rest of the world not doing too much better. We've heard about aid getting into Gaza. Well, guess what? Right-wing Israeli protesters blocked trucks carrying food supplies that were headed into Gaza yesterday and basically halted the trucks, threw the food all over the ground. And these are Israeli settlers and extremists. This is what they do. All right, they don't want civilians to have food. You know, they, even though the food is not coming from Israel, it's coming from Jordan, they still think they have the right to keep it from going to these innocent people. I've heard justification like, why should we be giving them food when they attacked us? Well, first of all, you're not giving them food. You're simply opening up a gate so that the food from Jordan is able to get through. And second, you damn well better be feeding them because you're holding them captive. All right. And that's something that is rule number one in any prison. And yeah, Gaza is a prison. Let's face it. You cannot get out. Look up, you know, if you're a Gaza citizen, you know, a citizen of the of what basically seems to be the Palestinian homeland, but is far from that. Let's say you're sick of that and you want to move someplace else. Look up how easy that is. It's prison. There's just no other way of looking at it. Anyway, most of the people behind this attack were settlers. I like how the news story calls them Israeli activists. These aren't activists. These are thugs. These are like the people who attacked the peaceful demonstrators in UCLA. They know one thing, and that's violence. And that is what the fight is against. Not against Jews, not against Israelis, against violent thugs that put down innocent people and make them live in an environment of fear. But yeah, most of them were settlers. And may I say, since we like to use the word illegal, the phrase illegal alien in this country, I'd like to call them illegal settlers. In fact, you know what? Let's do the whole right-wing thing and let's call them illegals. Yeah, you're illegal because what you did was you built your settlement on someone else's land. And you broke international law by doing that. Oh yeah, I know the Israeli government doesn't care about that and somehow thinks they're above international law, but you did. And you're illegal as a result. So yeah, this is what they do. The common theme, according to witnesses over there, the common theme among all of them is that they are from the right-wing Zionist groups, the religious nationalist stream. It is a total outrage that there are people who are attacking and looting these convoys coming from Jordan, going to Gaza to deliver humanitarian assistance. That's Jake Sullivan, U.S. National Security Advisor, saying that. We are looking at the tools we have to respond to this, and we're also raising our concerns at the highest level of the Israeli government. It is something we make no bones about. We find it completely and utterly unacceptable. And, you know, credit to the administration for finally seeming to get the message, but got to do more. And we all have to do something, too. We have to acknowledge that, yes, this is progress. Okay, we can't just keep condemning. Acknowledge when there's progress. It's certainly not enough, but that is how you take steps, by saying, yes, you're going in the right direction. Let's go a little further. Let's go a lot further, in fact. it's really, you know, reading this, I'm just reading through it right now, I'm sorry for the silence, but, you know, I'm seeing how IDF soldiers are protecting the settlers and how nothing happens to them, just like nothing happened to the UCLA thugs that attacked the demonstrators. They're protected by the police or by the soldiers, and the victims here are the ones who aren't doing anything except existing or being in a space that those people want them not to be in. And that's an update from that particular magical corner of the world, as it relates to here and the rest of the planet.
Yeah, the leadership is in they're best suited. They're in the best position to leverage or otherwise influence any of this, if at all. The students, clearly, from what you've read, they really can only do so much before they themselves are met with the rule and the authority of the state. And I think they've really put this to the fore and made it something that will not go away unless there is some real stern leadership globally on this issue.
And I want people to think, you know, the progress the Biden administration has made is halting at best, but it is progress. And I want you to think about what it would be like if Trump won and if the houses of Congress fell to Republicans. I actually had to go to Snopes for this because the story is so unbelievable, but it's true. There was a U.S. House bill introduced by Republicans this month that proposes sending people convicted of unlawful campus activity to Gaza. Yeah. So basically, what they're saying, this was introduced by U.S. Representative Andy Ogles of Tennessee, it's called the Anti-Semitism Community Services Act. We require those convicted of unlawful activity on the campus of an institution of higher education to provide community service in Gaza. So you criticize Israel, and that makes you anti-Semitic, and your punishment is to be sent over to where Israel, the country that you are criticizing, is bombing on a regular basis. It could be a death sentence. This is just unfathomable, but it's what the Republicans want. Trump has made it very clear that he would be in favor of things like this. It could happen. If he gets elected, if Republicans win the House and the Senate, bills like this could become reality. So don't tell me there's no difference or that the difference is not significant. It is huge. And while we may not be getting everything we want immediately, we'd better recognize when we're on a good road and when we're on a dead end. All right, because I don't think the choice could be any clearer. And with that, let's go to Eurovision, because, boy, we needed it this week. And, you know, I got to say, for all the people who ridicule Eurovision, I used to be one of them, you got to give it a chance. You really do. It's tough in this country to follow it, unless you listen to Emma Backfish's show on alternate Saturdays here on this station, which is awesome. There are very few outlets for you to know what's going on in that culture. This competition, which basically is a bunch of European countries, for some reason Israel, which is not in Europe, and Australia, which I really don't get, and of course Israel caused all kinds of controversy by having a presence there. I don't think it's fair to put any of that on the Israeli artist. It's certainly not her fault that her country is doing bad things. But that overshadowed a lot of the music that was actually being played there. What they do is they have presentations from all the countries, I think 37 to start with. Last week they had the first semifinal on Tuesday, the second semifinal on Thursday. They eliminate 10 countries that way, maybe 11. And then on Saturday they have the final. And it's supposed to be 26 teams or 26 countries. However, there was another controversy where the singer from the Netherlands was disqualified because of some backstage incident, which is still kind of murky. So there were 25 finalists. And the winner in the end was this 24-year-old from Switzerland, known as Nemo. And what was particularly significant about that, and actually a couple of acts, including the Irish musician, was that these were non-binary singers. And that had never happened before. Well, certainly a non-binary singer had never won the competition before, but Nemo did. And I really have to encourage people to go onto YouTube and watch some of these videos, because while the whole thing should be there by now, in this country, they make it very hard. You have to subscribe to a streaming service and pay and still see commercials, or you can go with a VPN like we did and go into a nice Scandinavian country that doesn't believe in commercials and see the entire 4-hour ceremony with just a 15-second announcement at the beginning, 15-second announcement at the end, and all the rest uninterrupted festivities. That's how it should be. And that's the magic there. But if you go onto YouTube, you can find all of the videos. Each singer has a produced video, and then they have the live performances. And they do a live performance for the semifinal. They do a live performance for the final. But they also have the produced video. And in Nemo's case, the produced video really was an incredible work of art, because he's basically, or they, you know, I'm going to get pronouns wrong, and that it's okay. People get pronouns wrong, and non-binary, they basically told the story of coming out of the closet and identifying as non-binary. And you just watch this video and you see the transition take place as they're wearing all these different outfits. And finally, in the end, in this operatic climax, they blossom like a flower. And just seeing that alone is so inspirational. And you just want to say to people like Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman, this is what you can't understand, the importance of self-identification, of being great, being yourself, being honest to who you are. It's not a threat to you. It's not in any way taking away anything that you have and have had all your life. It is a beautiful thing to see people triumph in that way. Your vision is filled with stories like that. And with Nemo, I think it couldn't have been expressed any better. The song is called The Code. And it's got great lyrics too. At one point, describing themselves as existing somewhere between the O's and ones, a reference to binary. And it's just so well done. The live performance too is well worth watching, because they're doing all these acrobatics on this stage, which is like launching up into the sky. And of course, we're going to go out with that song. The winner, The Code from Nemo Eurovision this year. And, check out all the videos, because there are some really good ones, some really classics.
Yeah, it would be refreshing to see.
Sorry about that. Go ahead.
It would be refreshing to see more avenues, spaces like this created to laud people like this in our own country, in the way Eurovision has become this, even though the contest isn't explicitly about that.
We are out of time, unfortunately. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Here is the winner of Eurovision this year. Good night.
Welcome to the show, let everybody know I'm done playing the game, I'll break out of the chains. You better buckle up, I'll pour another cup. This is my boy, so drink it up, my friend.
Tell about life, but the good and the bad, better hold on tight. Who decides what's wrong, what's right? Everything is balanced, everything's light. I got so much on my mind, and I've been awake all night. I'm so pumped, I'm so psyched, it's bigger than me, I'm getting so hyped. Like, oh, let me taste the lows and highs. I went to hell and back to find myself. I'm
found my kingdom come. My heart beats like a somewhere between the O's and ones. That's where I found my